This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real life store stage, all the way to the, hey Marge, did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify is there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Running a growing business means getting the insights you need wherever you are. With Shopify's single dashboard, you can manage orders, shipping, and payments from anywhere. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the United States, and Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/ifanboy, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/ifanboy now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/ifanboy.
This episode is brought to you by FX's The Veil, starring Elizabeth Moss. FX's The Veil is an international spy thriller that follows two women as they play a deadly game of truth and lies on the road from Istanbul to Paris and London. One woman has a secret, and the other has a mission to reveal it before thousands of lives are lost. FX's The Veil premieres April 30th, only on Hulu.
This is iFanboy Pick of the Week 827, brought to you by iFanboy listeners just like you and Josh Williamson. Fanboy Pick of the Week, episode 827. My name is Connor Kilpatrick, and this is my co-host, Josh Lanigan.
That's correct. That's me. I checked the paperwork. We are clear to move on.
All right. We are a fanboy. Every week we read a bunch of comics, and one of us picks their favorite book. We call that the Pick of the Week. We'll talk about that book, other books from the week, the patron pick, listener mail if we have time, and spoil things. Here's your warning. There might be spoilers because we've got to talk about the books. So that's your one and only warning this week. Josh, you had the pick. You and Joshua Williamson.
Joshua Williamson shows up in this script, not one, not two, but three times. It's possible he will come up a different time. I can't tell you for sure. But sure. It's interesting as we go through this show. There's many faces of Joshua Williamson.
He's 33% of the books.
Yeah, I think that's the same. That's the same amount of books he's doing at DC. He's doing 33% of the books. This became the pick of the week at the very last moment. I was looking forward to it, and I had saved it for last out of the sort of mainstream books.
Yeah,
because I'd enjoyed the last issue so much, and it was such an unexpected thing. And what I thought was really cool about this issue of Rogues is it was kind of. It was sort of a vast tonal shift. Not vast. Like, it was just the next chapter. You know what I mean? Like, we got the sense we'd moved on. So the last time it was, we're going to get the gang together for one big last heist at Gorilla City. And then here, we're at Gorilla City. So it wasn't like a whole thing about getting there. There's a couple of pages where they figure out a puzzle. And then they walk in and there's Gorilla City. And it's more or less a Wakanda-type thing.
Yeah.
It's a hidden technological marvel of a city. But then it very sharply in that there is, you know, it's just a regular city. There's like poor areas and slums. It's run by apparently guerrilla gang bosses of some kind.
Yeah,
there was just a lot of unexpected stuff in here.
Yeah, in the intervening years, because this book takes place in, you know, an out of continuity future. Mm-hmm. It looks like Gorilla City's gone inward, and you know, they've become 1920s gangsters. the gorillas who are in charge. You know, Garrod is wearing a white suit with a red tie, and he walks around the table like Robert De Niro in The Untouchables, and his wife is a gorilla but looks like a woman, but is a gorilla. He's got a big 20s hat on. So yeah, it looks like they've become insular. Although there are humans who live in the city and work in the city.
Like the rogues are walking around. I was like, isn't that a problem that they're walking around? And it wasn't. It was fine because there's some people that live there, which makes sense.
Yeah. So yeah, I found the exploration of the city really interesting.
Yeah.
As you said, all the different parts. You know, gambling on the street, the trickster gets involved in you know, street gambling, and that's a problem, and you know, all kinds of, and basically they get there and all their plans have gone awry because Gorilla City is not what they expected it to be. So their giant heist plan is now going to be rethought on the fly.
And everyone knows that in the heist movie that if something changes, what do? You walk away, you get out.
Yeah.
But that's not how this goes. Snart, Len, not his sister, you know, he's like, no, we're doing this. I actually really like, he said a couple of times, like, we've been in worse spots than this and we got through. And I was like, that's interesting. It's true.
Yeah.
And there's something really interesting about the way that they've set up the Len Snart character in this. It's like midway between, like, he's a bad guy.
Yeah.
But there's still like sort of a gray area about it. And you're like, well, does he make, because you know, they're the protagonist of this. So you kind of want to see them succeed. I like that.
But in every heist movie, what do you want? You want to see the heist get pulled off.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, even though you're watching Thieves, you're just like, pull the heist off.
And you know, the person that they're stealing from always has to be not great. So in this, it's Gorilla Grodd. And they're like, yeah, that's fine. But there's also a million gorillas who live down there and be fucking them up too. I like that, like the trickster, for example, like, he keeps making bad choices. Mm-hmm. And in a movie, you'd be like, this is ridiculous. They never put up with it. But here in this sort of like comic book world, I'm like, all right, go with it. I just like, it's a little looser. You kind of, because it's talking gorillas and supervillains, like, be a little silly. And I think that's what's going on.
There's a gorilla walking around in a fedora and a trench coat. I mean, another one. In one of those like 70s plaid jackets. I mean, this is a silly book.
Yes, it is.
And it's
can I make an odd complaint?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know that I could tell the difference between all the gorillas.
Yeah, well, yeah.
We say that about people sometimes. I was like, well, who's this gorilla supposed to be? He did it with clothing. But like, I haven't seen Grodd in a while or thought about it. And I was like, he's the one with the scar on his face, right? But then, like, the other gorilla walked in and threw the head on the table. And I thought, wait, is that...
I know two gorillas. One is Solovar, and he's silver-backed. So okay. I don't know who any of these people are, or these gorillas.
Okay. So then the trench coat, the we'll call him the Bogart gorilla,
right,
comes out. And I thought, am I supposed to know who that is? Because there was a reveal. Like it was, what's your role, Grimm? And then I guess Grimm is a gorilla. He's the one in the plaid coat. He's the Popeye Doyle of gorillas. and then you turn the page and there's Bogart gorilla. And I thought, am I supposed to know who these are? And I don't think it matters.
No.
But I felt like I was missing a trick. But it's fine.
There was a lot of little nice things. Like you mentioned the trickster. He was the one that figured out that when they got to the location of Gorilla City, that it was all an illusion. Mm-hmm. Because they got there and it was like... the Ewok village, you know, there's a bunch of tree houses and little wooden bridges between them. And they were like, what? And he figured out it was all a trick. So there's all little, they've got little things here. Also the Leo Max art, I'm looking at page 18 on the digital reader, and they all have such different faces, the kind of faces you don't see in superhero comics.
Yes.
They all just look like regular dudes. They don't have heroic jawlines other than who's the trickster. Big tall black guy.
Oh, I don't know who he is. I mean, I know who he is, but I don't know what his thing is.
He's probably the only one that's sort of in the realm of a traditional looking superhero character. Mm-hmm. But everyone else just looks like a guy working at the place that has, you know, a weak chin or big nose or
middle class or working class, sort of solid regular folk.
Yeah, and so I like that the art's really nice, really detailed. He can draw gorillas really well.
He does. There's a shot where they're outside like the gorilla bank, and there's a bunch of like gorilla security guards, cops, you know, with their shirts tucked in, their big bellies, and holding their machine guns, and it's like, that's a great drawing. The posture and sort of just repose of the resting gorilla standing there is fantastic. It's great gorilla anatomy as far as I can tell. Yeah, this is one of those artists that, like we said, he showed up, I think, on Basket Full of Heads, and I'd never seen him. Mm-hmm. And just, it's like a fully formed sort of artist in the Scott Collins school, I think.
Yeah, for sure.
But super quality, like, doing dramatic and silly at the same time. Like, when the gorilla, you know, there's a bit where Grodd basically, you know, goes full gorilla, and he's like, oh, sorry, I reverted to the old ways. Sorry about that. Don't mean to. Brushes his white suit off, you know. But, like, the ragey gorilla bits are fantastic. It's just a book I did not expect. Right. I did not ask for. I wouldn't
have.
Were
you going to read it if you hadn't been patron pick?
No, I'm almost sure I wouldn't have. I'm really glad. Yeah, that's true. I'm really glad, because I saw that this was the second one. I didn't quite remember what it was at first when I saw the cover. I was like, what is that? Oh, you know, and I was looking forward to it because the other one had been such a surprise and such a delight. Yeah, like the pitch of this would not be something that would make me interested in it. But the execution,
we mentioned
was
that it's a
solid.
Silly book, but it's played deadly straight. And that's why it works and why it's also silly.
Mm-hmm.
Wait, is that Solovar? I think Solovar's wearing, yeah, he's wearing the plaid coat.
That is?
Oh, no, I'm sorry.
No, because Solovar is like the deposed leader.
Yeah, you're right.
He's not
there.
Talking
about Solovar as the plaid coat guy walked in, and I thought that was like a different kind of panel that was showing Solovar, but no, that's Popeye Doyle gorilla.
Can I point out one of the other gorillas? Let's see, if we go to page 34, and this is when Trickster is gambling with the people.
Mm-hmm.
And the gorilla at the table in the fedora with a feather in it, that is the guy from Taxi Driver. You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
He's in Taxi Driver. Note, as we go to the right, look at the gray, silver, poly walnuts temples on the next gorilla. The gorilla after that is balding. He's a balding man gorilla. He's got the Costanza. It's great. I mean, like the art design in this is spectacular, and you kind of don't notice it because it's so natural. But all those things that we just talked about, like, they had to be thought about, and then they had to be drafted.
Well, then then in the next several panels, there's Cool Guy Gorilla, who's got sort of got the white t-shirt tucked in with the blazer rolled up. He's kind of like a Miami Vice gorilla.
Yep. And then
and he's got like floppy hair from. I think this is all great. That's Bronze Tiger. Who is, I don't associate with the Rogues, but that's who he is,
I guess. And then on the page after that, if you look in the bottom lower left, there's a Tony Soprano shirt gorilla. It's so good. Like, and you can keep going. Like, these panels are all super. There's a lot of this. The back of the Gorilla City is awesome. I want a book there. I want this book. Just the Gorilla City book, Crime in the Gorilla City.
Oh, man. Yeah,
really good.
I enjoyed this. It was good. I think Leo Max is terrific.
Yeah, totally. I'm looking forward to seeing more of that, more of his work.
This week we had a big new volume. We had The Amazing Spider-Man 895 or issue 1, depending on where your allegiances lie. And we all know where they lie, or they should lie anyway.
This is the right way and a wrong way.
So this is the new volume written by Zeb Wells, drawn by John Romita Jr. Now we're past the Beyond story. We're back to Peter Parker. And this was very confusing.
Thank you.
Intentionally so, but still was very confusing. It opens up with a single page outside York, Pennsylvania. It's a giant crater, and Peter Parker is in the middle of it, and he is all fucked up, and he is barely making noises, and he's clearly been in some sort of horrible explosion. And we cut to 6 months later, as opposed to normally, you flash back, right? That's the normal thing we've come accustomed to for the last 20 years, is you start with something shocking, and then you flash back, and then you get there. Right. This is the opposite. So, A, what happened outside York, Pennsylvania? When did that happen? If Ron was here, he'd be very confused.
It's true. That was very difficult for him.
When did this happen? Why did this happen? what did this happen? All the questions. How did this happen? And now we're 6 months later, and Peter has fucked up his life. He is stubbly bearded. Mary Jane Watson's... Well, that's a big reveal. That's a big spoilery reveal. He owes money to the hospital from when he was in there from the Beyond incident, and he's got collection agents sitting on his stoop. He's alienated his friends.
Which is not a thing that happens, by the way.
Yeah.
Like everybody owes money to the hospital, and they just go, pay whatever you want. And you're like, I pay a nickel a month. And I'm like, fine, just pay it like that. They don't send people anymore.
Well, there's got to be something else going on there.
I know. You know, but he has become the thing that he's always been afraid of becoming forever.
Right.
Which is interesting, because his big thing is, I don't want to let anyone down. And here he seems to have let everyone down. The conversation with May.
Yeah,
including May at the beginning. Yeah. And he's mean to his friends. You know, Johnny Storm comes by, and apparently Johnny's still got at least another 6 months of this being way too hot.
I guess.
Maybe that's a metaphor, which I need that to be over, by the way. I'm done.
Yeah, I don't like it.
I assume it has something to do with however Dancelot is going to finish this up, and he's going to use it, and then he'll probably die. But I was confused, and I know that like it's a new thing. By the way, all new Spider-Man with the most known Spider-Man artist who's still living, whose father is the most well-known Spider-Man artist.
Right.
It's this time. It's all new. We promise. But here's this really traditional thing, which would bring up the next subject of you know, John Romita Jr. back on this, and I thought it was pretty good.
I loved it. Yeah, that was
pretty good, Romita.
Yeah, that was great.
We've really leaned into the fact that, you know, Romita, you know, there's no realism left in it. Like the dysmorphia of all of his characters is just part and parcel of it, and I'm cool with that.
What's the style? I mean, it's always been the style.
Yeah, but it's gotten more extreme. If you look back, it's like flattened out some. If you look back in the old days, it used to be a lot more spindly, and now things are a lot more squat.
Mm-hmm.
It's just a little different. It's just developed over time into a different thing, and you know, it's whatever his artistic shorthand is, and I'm not complaining about it. But I also do think that I think his inkers do a hell of a lot of work.
I'd like to point out that when we started iFanboy, Romita Jr. was our age.
Shut your poor mouth.
Now he's 65 years old.
Fuck you.
That makes sense. He was a relatively young guy at the scene. Well, no, because he'd been on the scene for a long time, even at that point.
Yeah.
For a long, long time.
Because he had done Thor when I was like 11.
Well, yeah, and the X-Men. He did a lot of things when he was in his 20s. So he was the established. I mean, he's terrific. I know people complain. I don't know why they complain. I think he looks great. I think it looks like Marvel Comics.
I think he does Spider-Man stuff that works for him. And he does stuff that doesn't work for him. And I think that he's helped or hindered greatly by which inker he's working with. Scott Hanna's a sort of classic inker for him.
Oh yeah.
And who's the other one? I forget, the one who did the Superman Frank Miller story. Anyway, like his inker makes a big difference. He's a guy who always works with an inker.
Sure.
I think there's bits. Yeah. It's but it was good. It fit here. It was colored well. You know, at the time when I was reading it, I was kind of lost. But now that I sit here and we talk about it, I was like, it was actually pretty good. I think it was a good table setting. Resetting.
Yeah, I mean, it's very confusing, so it makes you want to know what the hell happened. And, look, we gave you the spoiler warning. I said it was your one and only one, but I lied. Here's another one, just in case, a double spoiler warning. The big reveal here is, you know, Peter's wandering the city. He's trying to find a job. He can't get one. He's late. He was late to an interview. He keeps finding himself walking past Mary Jane's place. And we find out that, you know, she's like, he calls her and she's like, Peter, what, you've got to stop calling me. Don't call me again. And then the big reveal is she's got two kids with some doofus. And so, so what's the time?
It seems like it's been more than 6 months.
Those kids are not newborns. Like, how far have we jumped in the future?
Because all we know about 6 months is this takes place 6 months after the first image.
Right. Because which
apparently is a decade.
Is like seven.
Yeah. Eight. Yeah, eight.
Seven. I was going to say eight, but I didn't. Like, how many years have we jumped in the future?
He's got Velcro shoes on.
Right.
Actually, I was going to say, he's got Velcro shoes on, so he's young. And then I looked and I was like, his dad also has Velcro shoes on. Which means that I bet John Romita has Velcro shoes on. Which also means, by the way, that Johnny Storm is still fucked.
Right. So, like, how far in the future are we? Because those kids are not young.
Some shit's gone down. He's holding some device at the very beginning. Also, let me ask you this. Do you know who Digger is?
Digger.
You ever heard of that character?
Digger.
The big lizard guy.
No. They all look like they knew him, and he had a long history. I don't know who this is.
So that might be a feint, too. It's one of those things where it's not like we don't know comics. You know what I mean?
You can't know everything, though. There's too many things.
But sometimes there's... No, I know. But that's the thing. I always feel like comics lean on this thing that we all know this thing. And I was like, well, if I don't know all these things, how can most people?
Well, Digger,
if that's a reveal of, if that's a reveal of another character that's supposed to be a big deal, I didn't get it. And if that's supposed to be some new character that anybody who would really know this stuff would be like, I don't know who that person is. Like, that's the, but.
Digger first appeared in 1969.
Okay, so not new.
1969, created by Jerm Steranko.
Well, there you go.
And apparently he was in the Spider-Geddon story, but there's a lot of people in that Spider-Geddon story. I don't know. There's a subplot with Tombstone and the superhero mob wars in New York as they're trying to fill the vacuum from Kingpin. But again, if this is 7 years later, are they still trying to fill that vacuum?
Some shit's happened if there's kids there.
I suspect those kids are not supposed to be that old, but that's how Romita treated them. But even then, if they're running around the house, they're still not newborns. So
even if they're newborns, it doesn't really make sense.
Yeah.
It's two of them. They're not the same age.
Right.
I think he's holding some device at the beginning, some spider-based thing. I think we've had some sort of timeline.
You think he could try to fix something in broke time, like the Flash?
So how about this thing that we notice is that, let's just make a wild generalization that many of the people writing comics professionally today in Marvel and DC are about our age.
Mm-hmm.
They sort of came in when we were in our 20s, and they were in their 20s, and they were young single people, mm-hmm. or, you know, they didn't have kids. And now they all have kids.
Mm-hmm.
And let's talk about how many stories in Marvel Comics and DC Comics are about their kids now.
It's just a problem.
It's a ton.
It's not
However,
good.
the other side would be that if, write what you know, that's the rule. If they go and replace all of the people that we knew who are coming up and who are writing the comics now with younger people, we're not going to know what the fuck they're talking about. Because as you said on the Hangout, they should be thrown into the sun.
Right. No, into space.
It's a no-win situation.
Yeah.
Millennials can survive in space.
I mean, put him in a ship. Send him. I don't know. I didn't work on the logistics yet.
What I'm saying is, I know why there are all these parents about a story about parents and their kids and losing their kids and constant, like, that's the fear and the end of the world and whatever. But if you replace all these with younger people, then you're going to get all the comics that are written by people and you don't like those stories.
I don't like those stories. It's a no-win situation. This is what got Peter in trouble in the first place was in the 80s when they aged him up because the writers all had aged into middle age. So they made Peter middle age with a family and it was like, nope, that's not Spider-Man. And that's how he got in trouble. So.
Mm-hmm. Well, at least this time it's not his kid.
It was confusing, but I liked it. And so I'm looking forward to seeing what the hell's going on here.
Yes.
And I kind of like the idea that Marvel, a company that doesn't usually do this kind of thing, is throwing caution to the wind in terms of timelines and things like that. Assuming that's what's going on here. It's got to be. Otherwise, I don't know how those kids appeared.
It's true. All right. We need to move along.
Dark Knights of Steel, number six. This is the halfway point of this 12-issue story. And I'd sort of forgotten what had happened in 5. I had to go back and look real quick because I'd forgotten what had happened to Bruce. But here we have the aftermath of, we found out last time that Bruce and Clark are brothers, or half-brothers, and Bruce has some power, and so then Clark stabbed him with a kryptonite blade and dropped him. And that's what I remembered that part. I didn't remember that he got picked up by the Kents.
Yeah, I'd kind of forgotten, but I figured I'd wing it and figure it out as I went along, which is kind of what happened. I almost made this pick of the week, mm-hmm. and... I think I'd mentioned this before, but they're not adhering strictly to the rules of the characters as we know them.
Right.
And so, like, the people who are aligned with each other in the regular DC universe are not necessarily aligned with each other here. And while the characteristics and personalities of them match what we're used to. Nothing else does. And so it is extremely fresh in that way. Yeah. It just goes further afield. So many times it's just laying a template over what we've already seen before. And this setup is completely different. So it's really getting into that nature versus nurture, you know, kind of. But it's such a wacky out there sort of basic conceit, you know, is that it's Arthurian times and the all of the Kryptonians ended up there instead. And but they've all become those heroes. And then Black Lightning, right? Yeah, yep. He was the king. Mm-hmm. He's aligned with the Amazons.
It's really nice world building, which the world building yes. uses our familiarity to make a lot of shortcuts. I don't mean that in a bad way, just it saves time. But so that time can be spent building out the sort of strategic part of the world and who's aligned with whom and what are the wars that are happening and who are betraying who. And it's unfortunate, or it came out the same time as Tom Taylor's other out of continuity book that he did for Marvel Dark Ages. And this is sort of mm-hmm. point counterpoint, whereas Dark Ages moved too quickly and felt like we were reading an outline. This is 12 issues. He's really getting to dig into the world, which is something the Dark Ages didn't get yeah. to do. And so it's really enjoyable.
And that's the other sort of contrast. That's the other contrast that sort of made me like this, is that I looked and I was like, okay, there's six more. Like this needs that much space, and it's compelling enough and it's entertaining enough to sustain that, I think.
Right. And that means there's a lot more that's going to happen, I mean, obviously, but like there's a lot more intrigue to happen, you know? So there's a lot has happened here. We get Ra's al Ghul introduced as being part of Etrigan, the demon. And there was an allusion to the Titans, and Tim Drake reveals himself to be a spy for the other side. And like, there's a lot of things that are revealed here.
Tim Drake was fantastic in this. Yeah, yeah. I really liked his storyline where they're all mad that he was spying on them, and he's like, "I'm not, you know, yes, that technically is true, but I'm not here to harm anybody. I'm here to, you know, like, and you believe it because you know. Again, that's that shorthand. Like, you know, Tim Drake is an honorable person, and right. he means all those things that he says. But it's very interesting.
But then again, you can't necessarily count on that because you know you had Supergirl, who is an honorable person in our world, but in the DC world, but here she, you know, in this book, she's murdered people. So you never, you know, and Superman's not even Superman here. He's more of a dick, which you can say is a Tom Taylor thing. He does a lot, but it is what it is.
Yeah, it's true. It's true. Superman is his foil to a certain extent. Like if you go to, he lost his temper in Injustice. He becomes the big bad zombie that they throw into the sun mm-hmm. in Deceased. And here he's like the spoiled prince boy.
He's not quite. I was going to say another Game of Thrones character's name I can't remember. But he's not quite Joffrey, but he's not quite Superman either. So we could spend a half an hour talking about Thor 750, but we're not. I think this would have been my pick of the week. But I didn't think too hard about it. But this would have been up there. Odin has been killed. We're at Odin's funeral. Thor is doing a reading, or at least a speech, and it leads to him reading from the Book of Odin, which is slightly confusing because not all the stories are about Odin. But it's a device to bring back a bunch of classic Thor creators to tell little short stories. Walt Simonson, Dan Jurgens, J. Michael Straczynski, Olivier Coipel, Jason Aaron, and for some reason Al Ewing.
The Lee Garbett art was great.
Yeah, I just don't associate. I mean, he did the Loki book, I guess, but I just don't associate him with Thor. But that's why. That's for some reason. But I even like the J. Michael Straczynski story.
What? What did you just say?
It was funny because I was reading this book, and this is about the death of Odin, and I really just don't understand how Asgardian death works, because they're immortal gods, right? But they also go to Valhalla. So here in his story, where Thor is talking to an Earth lawyer about writing up sort of a legal documents for when he dies, you know, the lawyer says what I was thinking, which is, I don't understand. You guys don't die. And he says, well, we don't die until we do. And I was like, that is a super elegant way of talking about comic book logic. And it worked for mm-hmm. me. We don't die until we do. We keep coming back until we don't. I was like, okay, I get it.
As long as you give Straczynski like an end page count, he can usually finish something.
So, and the art was
like,
great.
If this had to go into next issue, forget it.
Walt Simonson did the origin of Beta Ray Bill, which I didn't know. Juergens did a fun one. Like, I just thought this was a fun issue that you know, Jason Aaron didn't have, what's his name drawing it, but he has, names have gone. That part of my brain has been damaged.
Das Pastoris. I loved that art.
The art's great. He's got some really interesting artists, but I was hoping it was going to be Esad Ribic, but it wasn't. But Das Pastoris is really good.
That's it. I turned to that page and I opened it and it was like, it's more like traditional Thor. It looks like the Thor over in the Norse gods book at Dark Horse.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I was like, who is this person? This is gorgeous. I was really blown away. That was probably my favorite part of the whole book. I mean, I think in general, I liked this, but I did want to enjoy it more than I did.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I got to each story and I was like, all right. And I thought it was fine. I don't know if I just wasn't into it at the moment or whatever. It was also, as I started, it was like Odin is dead. And I was like, I literally don't remember that happening because it happens so often as to be meaningless.
Yeah.
That, I mean, I literally don't remember. I have a vague, because I know he went to pick up Odin and Odin was working at a bar.
Right.
And then they came to fight somebody, but it was getting mixed up in my head with images from the last Thor trailer that just came out. I was like, wait, is that the broken hand? Like, I'm losing track of all of the things and the death. So at the beginning, I just go, I guess Odin's dead. I just accepted it. We're at the funeral. And this Thor is a slightly different version of the Thor who's now king and isn't sure and has lost his dad, because that's happened. Even if Odin wasn't dead, he's been lost 100 times in the last 5 years, it seems like.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm like, we're still dealing with this. It's fine. And I think I expected to hear Odin stories.
Right. That's because it opened up with a Beta Ray Bill story, and I went, wait, what? Because we're reading from the Book of Odin. But then I was like, okay, well, it's Thor 750, so they're doing a retrospective of Thor, which is fine, but that's not the conceit of the book.
I don't think it held together like that. And I gotta tell, I got to the Al Ewing story, and I just stopped reading it. I looked at the art, 'cause I think the art's beautiful, but I was like, I do not understand or care about this. I didn't at the time. You know, you're right. The Straczynski story was, I can't say it.
Just say it.
The Straczynski story was interesting. It doesn't make any sense, but I don't care, because that's comic book. Like, why would you bring up this lawyer? I don't believe he has any authority in Asgardian law, but whatever. It actually reminded me of the contract with God when he had the rabbis or whatever, the learned wizened men write the contract, you know, and they brought this guy up like, I want to get this stuff sorted out. And it's like, no one's going to care about this piece of paper, Thor.
Yeah, Baldur and Loki are not going to recognize the authority of this guy. So, then we get back to the present day, and the conceit is that Odin is now stuck inside Mjolnir, or at least his consciousness, so he can talk to Thor and berate him from inside Mjolnir, because when he went to Valhalla, the doors to Valhalla were broken and everybody was gone. So Valhalla is gone, or at least he says Valhalla's gone. And so now he gets to live in the hammer, like Firestorm, and yell at Thor.
Which again, though, feels like Valhalla's gone. It was like, all right, but everything for the past number of years has been, here's this thing you know about Thor. This one's dead. This one's taken away.
Yeah.
It's like, we're not even coming up with stories. We're just looking at the structure and going, what happens if we remove this thing? The World Tree's dying. Blake has been a different thing than you thought.
Right.
Over and over.
I've been saying this for a while. It feels like for the last decade, Thor stories have just been about tearing Thor down.
Mm-hmm.
And after a while, you can't raise the stakes for a full decade, because after a while there's nowhere for the stakes to go. So now what?
Well, that's it. That's exactly what I'm saying, I think. Is the thing is, like, the Thor, like, Odin's dead. Okay. Valhalla's gone. Fine. You know, like I get it. It keeps, every time it's the end of the world. And I know that it's comic books and it's supposed to be, but like, the end of the world doesn't mean so much anymore. Also, there's a 200-foot trash fire in Delhi. So, you know, how is this supposed to worry me?
Yeah, it's tough. You know, we mentioned Das Pastoris on Thor, and similar style, Ricardo Federici on Action Comics 1042, I think it's very similar. And
yeah,
might be my favorite thing about the book His style works for what they're the story they're telling, which is a big
fantasy, yeah. You know, Boris Vallejo kind of Esad Rubik. It's fantastic.
Yeah,
I like this. I don't fully know what's going on in the details of it, but I don't think that so much matters. As a sort of an Elseworlds story, and I'm only talking about the Superman on War World story. I don't read the backups. You know, this Mongol thing.
Yep.
It's so overwrought and ridiculous, and it has no consequences back on Earth that I'm into it.
Right. Nor does it make any sense. None of it does. But like, you know, over in Justice League, there's Clark Kent, Superman running around. So like, you know.
Don't care.
DC has lost the ability to even come within a mile of telling a cohesive universal story. It's fine. That's what their whole thing now.
I mean, that's what they're doing right now. So it's very different. I'll grant you, but I mean, if nothing else, the art and the action scenes in this thing make it worth your time.
Oh yeah, no, the book itself as a standalone Elseworld Superman story is terrific. I don't want to read a story about Superman. I don't want the quote unquote real Superman to be depowered, you know, living on War World. But as an Elseworld, it's great.
Yeah. So I'm going with that. I look forward to it now.
Is terrific. And actually things are happening now. You know, I think for a while it was treading water. You know, it was interesting water, but it was treading it. Now finally something's happening where they've started their revolution. So they can't sustain from here.
Now, when we were talking about Amazing Spider-Man, I was I was thinking, I think there was some time jumping that was confusing, but it wasn't in this issue, and I couldn't remember what it was, and it was in New Bern number 6.
So New Bern, up to this point, has been sort of standalone investigative stories where New Bern and his new random partner haven't, you know, working for the crime families, investigating their internal crimes. So now we learn about his partner's backstory. I was very confused by these title pages in which the year blocked out the text in the back. And I was like, what is happening? Am I supposed to be able to read that?
Was the year supposed to indicate the year of the story you had just read?
No, it's the one coming because it starts with the title page.
I know, but like there's times
2022, so it's got to start with that's got to be what's happening going forward. So it keeps going backwards.
It kind of, yeah. It was a little, there was places where it didn't seem to make sense. And I think in my mind, I thought I was reading a New Bern story, and you would see him at different ages.
Mm-hmm.
And it took me a little while to figure out that wasn't what was happening, because I was like, wait, so he knows this girl? But it wasn't that. It was a different thing. No, I get that. But
what is her name? I'm looking through this and looking for anybody to call her by her name. And I don't think anyone's calling her by her name.
I wouldn't know New Bern's name if it wasn't the name of the book.
So she was going to be a cop. She was in the police academy, and one of her classmates was looks like related to a mafia family. His last name's Albano. I don't know if it's some sort of departed situation.
I had missed that part.
Yeah,
I thought he was just an
the guy. The bully's yeah. name is Albano, and may or not be some sort of departed situation. But anyway, he was one of her classmates. He was always bullying this other guy, and he stood up. She stood up for the guy being bullied, ended up accidentally killing the Albano guy in an alley. Mm-hmm. Like she punched him and he fell back and hit his head and he died. And so then the guy who had been bullied has grown up into be a cop who is on the take. So there's a lot going on here. She's accidentally killed a mobster's son, although that was a long time ago, so I assume nothing came of that. And the guy she protected is now on the take with the same mob family. But
I lost the thread on this, and I don't know that I picked it up at any point when I was reading it.
Yeah, I think, I've enjoyed the standalone nature of the book.
Yes.
And so this adding this in, it's like, well, I haven't been keeping track of everybody, so mm-hmm. I don't know if this is supposed to mean a lot or not. But I'm not saying it's bad. I just was like,
no.
What are we doing? Now we're doing something different here. So
I know exactly what you mean. And I think it was well done as a thing, but I feel like I didn't get my footing at the beginning of it because I don't know, and I don't even know enough about this girl. Like, I don't know anything about her. I kind of like, you have to explain who somebody is and why they're there for sure and should come, but I feel like The sixth issue, I don't know enough about her in the actual story to appreciate her background yet, especially since I don't know anything about Newbern's background. Other than, I barely know he's named Newbern. I couldn't tell you anything else about him. It's the title of the book. It's the only thing I know. I know this girl who is not Josie Mack from the Batman stories. I don't think, I think this came too early. You know what I mean?
Like, what is Newbern's first name?
Kyle? I don't know.
If you had to pick, you'd go Kyle Newbern.
No. I went with a funny name there, you see.
I don't think, I don't know what his name is.
Let me ask you this. Have we finished the first arc?
But that's my point. Is there an arc? I thought it was just standalone stories.
Yeah, but there was like an overall thing going on with the families, and he had to find something by a certain time, and maybe it is just, I don't know. This is a problem, and it may not be a problem of the book. It may be a problem of the middle-aged mind and way too much information and you know, doing things in an issue form. These come out right on time like they're supposed to, but there's just so much stuff.
I like it. I like the issue. The story itself was interesting. It just, I'm trying to figure out what my footing is supposed to be. That's all.
I think that's correct.
Solar Surfer Rebirth number 4, the second to last issue from Ron Mars and Ron Lim, the Rons. I really like this issue. It opens up with a nice little tribute to the history of Silver Surfer, in which, you know, reality has been broken. So the Silver Surfer from this 90s book world runs into four other Silver Surfers who are, initially at least, drawn to look like Kirby and Buscema and Mobius and Allred from the different eras of Silver Surfer. And after that first page, they don't really stick to that drawing style, but not too much anyway. But so someone asked on the on our Patreon Discord what this book was, because Jack of Hearts is on the cover. We're going to get to that in a second. They thought maybe it would tie into She-Hulk. This book does not tie into anything. It is taking place in 1992. This is not tying into anything you're reading right now. It is taking place firmly back when I paid way too much money for Silver Surfer 50. That being said, it's the summer of Jack of Hearts, Josh. He's on the cover. He was barely in the book. He shows up and he is immediately dispatched by Thanos. But I enjoyed the fuck out of this book.
Is he going to be in a movie?
I don't know, because, but he's everywhere because now.
It seems like they're trying to make him happen, and I'm not buying it. Like, or maybe it's like a bet. Like, I bet we can make Jack of Hearts cool. You cannot. Let's put him on as much stuff as we can for 6 months. We'll make Jack of Hearts. And it's like a bet.
I just noticed that on the cover, and I don't hate his costume as much as you do, but on the cover,
I don't hate it. I don't understand it.
It's like a samurai, you know, Alice in Wonderland situation.
But it's a mashup that I don't believe works.
Anyway, look at the cover. His little, what do you call the cloth that hangs down between the legs? Whatever that is.
It's a loincloth, isn't it?
It's got a giant arrow pointing at his junk.
That's none subtle. it's not subtle. That's like, this is who this guy is. This is what he's all about. He's about
this guy fucks.
He's about this. That's a millennial phrase that's funny. If I'm just going to give credit where due.
So anyway, I like this. I love this book. I really do.
I'm glad.
You know, it's a thematic companion to the Hulk book that Peter David's writing. It's these guys from that era who are proving they can still, you know, Ron Mars has still got it. Ron Lim has still got it. So I'm enjoying it immensely.
Earlier, I made a comment about a J. Michael Straczynski story, which,
yeah,
I mean, I feel like I'm going to have to wash my face out.
You gave him a pick of the week once. Don't try to rewrite history.
What was it? Batgirl number 30.
It was Brave and the Bold.
Brave and the Bold. There you
33.
Go. 33. Number 33. Good story. Hey man, his ability. Anyway, we don't have time for that. He's a human monster. I've never heard otherwise. Not a single pro I've ever talked to. Robin number 13. And I really like this Damian book.
You do?
Every time it comes out, I look forward to it. And I feel like it delivers. It has, to me, a feeling that is not unlike the old Batgirl series. Like, the art reminds me of that sort of youthful energy. You know, the Batgirl series, I meant the Cassandra Cain one.
Yeah, the Damian Scott one. The artist Damien Scott.
I feel like
this is another Josh Williamson book.
Josh Williamson book. Totally different feel than that. You wouldn't know that this is the same guy who did that Rogue book or the book we're going to talk about after this. And I think that that's interesting. Mm-hmm. But, you know, this is, and I don't know this part of DC lore all that well with Slade Wilson and his daughter and the son and whatever.
Rose, yeah.
But the point is, I feel like
Jericho.
I feel like Williamson has a handle on a Damien that works. And, you know, they mm-hmm. aged him up a little past being snotty, you know, and he's confident, but not necessarily completely overconfident. They just gave him enough humanity and a second or third dimension that it works better for me. And, you know, we've had a long time to get with him. It's not like, I don't know when Grant Morrison introduced him, but it was a long fucking time ago. And then also, Batman needs to bring in help. And Damien goes, Grayson? He goes, no. And then we cut and we see Prometheus fighting on the side of Batman. And he's like, as long as I have my helmet, I have access to. And the guy slices off the thing in his helmet. He goes, crap. And just like, this character is ridiculous. Prometheus was introduced, I want to say, that wasn't the Grant Morrison Justice League.
I think so.
And if it wasn't introduced there, that's the only time he mattered. And so, like, that was the thing that sort of brought. It's just, I don't know. It's just, it's fun. It's very silly. It's overwrought. It has, like, it has a little bit of 90s left in it, but enough that doesn't make you feel stupid. And I really look forward to it.
I had a stroke after you said it. Damien works. So I don't, I know. I didn't hear anything you said.
You're going to have to trust me on it.
So those are the comics we want to talk about. But at patreon.com/ifanboy, all the patrons of the show get to vote to add a book to the rundown. And this week, it was a strange vote where at one point we had a three-way tie. And that point was like an hour before the end of the voting time. The votes were concentrated among four books. Usually it's like there's like a clear winner. But the winner by one vote was Justice League 75 from Josh Williamson and Rafa Sandoval and Jordi Tarragon and Matt Herms and Josh Reed. And this is, as the cover says, the death of the Justice League, kicking off the Dark Crisis story, I guess, that Josh Williamson is going to be overseeing for DC. And let me tell you how much of an impact it's made on me. While you're talking about Robin, I was desperately scrolling through this issue to remember the details because I was like, I know I read this. I read this, in fact, less than 24 hours ago, but I don't remember anything that happened in it. And that'll tell you basically everything about it.
I feel really bad because as you were talking, I was like, what am I going to say that isn't this confused the shit out of me? And at a certain point, I have to wonder, like, is that the books or is that me? And in this instance, I'm going to go with the books. As soon as I started reading it, I went, oh, no, this is all that stuff that as soon as I started reading it, I quit. Because, like, I like the idea of President Superman. I think it is ridiculous. Yet, when President Superman shows up and Captain Carrot shows up, I know that I do not want to read that story. Because it's never like a story about those characters. It's always about them mixing with all the other characters and then all the different worlds. And, you know, it's not very different than Crisis, right? I mean, like all the superheroes get pulled into one place.
Right, well, that's the point, yeah.
Right,
yeah.
But I could barely hold on to Crisis. I mean, like it's a lot. And this is just...
Well, the thing about Crisis is there was... some, not a ton, and I wasn't there reading it live at the time, clearly, but there was some groundwork, whereas this just drops you in, like, all, you know, the heroes all of a sudden all get zapped, you know, transporter style to this other place.
Yonder, Secret and, Wars, Crisis.
Yeah, and they're at the multiverse, the House of Heroes, the multiverse headquarters that Barry Allen's supposed to be at, but he's not there either. And that's where, I'm trying to remember, there's a great darkness, and like they've been seeding this, I guess, if I want to be fair, they have been seeding this a little bit, but I haven't really been paying attention to any of that. It's the great mystery of comics as to why neither Marvel or DC can make events work anymore. Why they just can't seem to tell a story that has impact or feels important. They just throw us in the deep end, and that can work sometimes, but this just was like all of a sudden everything was, there was a lot of fighting, people started dying, it's not like I believe these characters are all dead.
I didn't buy any of it. I was like, okay, right, whatever, let's get to the point.
if just days after merging with a new corporate boss, the people in charge of DC decided to, for some reason, to truly kill off all their money-making characters, first of all, they'd be taking their jobs in their hands. But second of all, there'd be a giant press release and be on CNN. But that's why you know this isn't quote-unquote real. But it was just so chaotic, and Pariah from the original Crisis was there, and he was somehow in your world must die for the true multiverse to be reborn. Okay. You know?
Yep.
In the same way that Thor has been telling the same story for 10 years, I feel like whatever's been going on since Final Crisis has just been, we've just been going in circles with DC in terms of these big stories, you know, death metal and all that stuff. It's basically all the same kind of thing.
Yeah, it's interesting. Is the coworker friend, he was like, so the Justice League's dying, huh? And I was like, what? And then, like, I had no idea because I don't pay attention. And then at first, because you were years ago, Connor, I remember that we walked in and we had a coworker go, oh, they killed Captain America, huh? And we're like, what? And it was like the day that it came out. You know, like, why would you spoil this? And it happened. This would be similar to the same thing, but I just didn't care. I was like, huh? He goes, yeah, it looks like.
Well, that's because that was quote unquote real, but obviously it wasn't. But whereas this is just a plot point.
Yeah, it's really interesting because, yeah, like, we keep going, like, how, okay, so Death of Superman happens, Death of Captain Marvel was a big deal, and then they wait 10, 15 years to do Death of Superman, let's say 10 years to do Death of Superman, and that was a huge, and then Death of Robin, Death of Superman, those years. Are the big ones, yeah. And then after that, it starts speeding up, and now, every week, and the people have died over and over again, Death of Wolverine.
Well, They in the same way they're trying to, Marvel's been chasing Civil War and DC's been chasing, they chase the sales, you know, the sales.
I know, but does it even work anymore? Like, is this the best they have?
Well, I mean, again, no one's buying 10 copies of this book because they think this is true. It's not true, you know,
right,
it's not real.
The point being, like, when are they going to be like, hey, I don't think this death of whatever works for more than like a 2% bump, so why don't we think of a different thing? Is this all that anyone can think of? Like, are we there? And I don't even think that any of these, a lot of the comics we're talking about, where we're talking about this thematic problem, it's not that the books are bad. It's just that the underlying concepts are just boring and retread. They're doing their best with them. I don't think there's bad craftsmanship going on. But like the basic structure of the thing is just like, hey, they're dying again. And you're just like, who cares? It doesn't mean anything.
I just wish I could figure out why. What the difference is between this and Final Crisis? What is the difference between whatever the last Marvel event was and Civil War? You know, like why were those two other ones super exciting and felt important and got all the readers, you know, really running out buying books and excited to talk about them, as opposed to now where we're all just like collectively like, eh, like what is the difference? And I don't know what it is.
I mean, this is a retread of that. Like, there's nothing new about it. There's nothing.
I mean, in Final Crisis is, so, you know, basically a retread of.
Oh, listen, I didn't love that. So
Crisis,
I,
and also.
That's what that felt like.
But I'm saying it's. But it just. It's just, what is the difference in the industry, in the readership, in the people that the. You could put the covers of every major quote unquote event up on the wall in front of me, and I probably wouldn't be able to tell you any of their plot lines after Final Crisis. Just because they're just so. Mm-hmm. Inconsequential.
I don't remember the plot.
I don't know what the crisis is.
Like, do you remember it? Like, you mentioned that a lot, so I guess that made an impact on you that it didn't on me.
Yes, it was the last great event. It was terrific.
Okay, fair enough. That was Grant Morrison.
Can't deny that the fan base at the time was super into it.
Well, I think that's got a big thing to deal with it, is that the fan base between then and now is completely changed. Like, the people reading comics and the people making comics are the same people. But the people buying comics are reacting entirely differently. Like, back then, that's Grant Morrison and J.G. Jones. That moves units on its own back then. Now, nobody moves you. I know we've talked about this, you know, together, and I think we've talked about it on the show, but like, there's no name that moves units anymore. There's no creator. There is, like probably in indie books they do, but it's not a significant needle. But in mainstream comics, you can't put anybody on a book. Frank Miller doesn't matter. Bendis doesn't matter. You know, no one does. And I think that had a lot to do with it, because these creators are teaming up to do this thing, and that would matter. And that doesn't anymore. This is Josh Williamson, who is fantastic, and like nobody loves DC Comics, and no, honestly, nobody works harder than that guy at making good comics. I know this, but he's not a name really, other than like a solid name. He's a, you know, if he was a sports guy, like he's on the team. He's a point guard. He's a solid veteran point guard. He does great stuff, but he's not on a poster. Rafa Sandoval, great artist. Not a superstar. Like none of the that's there.
Right.
I don't know, but there aren't superstars, is the point. Like it, to me it would be like if I start I have to use sports again, but like I don't watch college basketball cuz I don't know who anybody is. So I don't know who the superstar is. And so you're watching because of the team, you're not watching because of players, and I feel like that's this. You go, "Oh, Superman and Batman are in this. I'll read this," but nobody cares about the people making it anymore. Other than us, and we're old.
It's just weird. It's just strange. I mean, this left zero impact on me. I don't know that it was bad, but it certainly wasn't good.
That's true. It didn't. All that stuff being said, you still have the opportunity to grab a thing. But like, is it what it was? You know, like, is this what it's supposed to be? And if so, did it accomplish that task? Well, I don't know because I don't understand what this task is. So, but it didn't make.
And to be fair, it's not issue one of a new event. It's a prelude to Dark Crisis. So the event hasn't even started, but it doesn't bode well that
the zero issue can often be confusing. This is a zero issue if that's the case.
Yeah,
but it doesn't feel any different than any of the others. It felt like once all of the all of the multiverse people start showing up. As soon as I saw Captain Carrot, I went, "Oh, I'm gonna give."
You're up.
I mentally checked out, and this might be for somebody, but I know because of vast experience, it is not for me.
Yeah, that's fine,
and it's fine.
So ratings on Justice League 75 ratings.
I'm gonna 2.5. I'm gonna rate down the middle.
That's exactly where I was going. 2.5.
Yep.
Because it wasn't bad. The art was good for the most part, and there's a couple of bits here and there that I enjoyed, but for the most part, I finished it, and it just immediately left my mind.
It may have been an amazing paella, but I don't eat fish.
It's your loss.
Yeah. No, I recognize that entirely.
So sticking with it, are you going to read the first issue of Dark Crisis when it comes out?
No. Unless for some reason it comes out, and like people are like, "Oh my God, this is amazing." But it isn't going to be that, because I know what it's going to be. It's going to be a thing I'm not interested in. I'm just not into I don't really like Infinite Crisis or Crisis on Infinite Earths. Like, they're not my favorite things.
All right. Patreon.com/iFanboy. That is where every patron can vote to add a book to the rundown. Okay, real quick. How can you help iFanboy? Patreon.com/iFanboy. All the patrons help us directly. We appreciate that. They get to vote on things. They get hangouts. All kinds of fun stuff happens there. iFanboy.threadless.com is where you can buy t-shirts. iFanboy.com/support is where you can do a PayPal tip if you feel like it. iFanboy.com/Amazon is where you can find our Booksplode books as well as a general shopping link. And of course, on our Booksplode posts, you'll find links to bookshop.org books that help local bookstores when you make purchases. And we do appreciate all the ways you help the show. Thank you very much. You keep the show going, and we appreciate it.
I will talk then. Wait, hold on. One of the great things that you get is if you donate the $5 higher level, you can get a patron power. And I'm going to tell you right now, we're running low. We're right there. So if you've been thinking you wanted to get on this, it's a good time to sign up.
Well, we've done like 800 of these.
I realized that too as I had that. I was like, oh, wow, we've done many, many of these. And honestly, I'm going to tell you, I don't think we're getting worse at it. I don't think we're running out. I thought we would have by now. Like, it would just be like, hey, he's the fucking paperclip guy. Paperclip stuff, you know, but it's not. They're still fun. 800. Wow.
Well, I can look while you're doing yours.
It's fine.
You do yours, and I'll look.
So Kyle Firestein is the tailor. He can instantly he can magic.
I think it's Firestein.
Okay.
Just the way it's written.
Harvey Firestein, Kyle Firestein. That's what I heard. Kyle Firestein. Is the tailor. He can magically, by way of mystical force, instantly adjust your clothing to fit correctly. If it is pinching and bunching, he can move the things around. He can do shoes. Not even the tailor probably couldn't have. He could fix the shoes. It's a little tight on the toe. It's tight on the sides. Wave of the hand, and the fit changes both to be more comfortable and more flattering to the form. He's the tailor.
That was our 982nd power.
Wow.
So I swear I'm not high. Just I'm just saying that right now. It's way too early in the morning for me to be addled anyway, other than being tired. But Luke C.J. Smith is working at his computer, right? It's a work day for Luke. He's got to send an email. He types his email up, and he hits send. And what happens is, above his monitor, a pigeon appears with a little note in his little thing, and it flies away with his email. It lands on the computer of the person he wrote it to, and the email appears on their screen. When they write back, the pigeon takes the email, brings it back to Luke C.J. Smith. He is a magical email pigeon.
You know, your little preamble, I was like, what the fuck are you talking about? It's gonna be, and now I'm like, yeah, you sound a little fucked up. Like, wouldn't this be amazing? And then you say, and the person you're saying is, he's like, no, that's not amazing. That's stupid. Why would anyone do that?
Luke doesn't get to choose, you know, like, he didn't get, like, optic beams out of his eyes. He got a magical email pigeon.
But, like, it's much less efficient than if he had no magic email pigeon at all.
It's true, and that's something that happens. I mean, whether he's emailing on his phone, the pigeon appears above his phone or whatever, but his emails are delivered via magical email pigeon.
So he's basically living in, like, the Harry Potter world, but with a pigeon instead of a cool owl.
Right,
rats with wings.
Are they faster
than normal pigeons?
Yeah. I mean, they're not instantaneous, but they're...
If I email somebody in England right now, they're going to get it right away.
Yeah. Right.
Like, the pigeon is, like, a day?
It might take him about an hour.
Okay. But still might want to text. Yeah. Wait, does it only work for email, or is it like, does it all like WhatsApp or?
Well, if you follow the Saturday Night Live joke of emails, text being tiny emails, then a tiny text pigeon appears above his phone and sends his text messages.
Can I take a diversion? This is Luke C.J. Smith. Now, normally, CJ stands for some initials in there, but Luke does not start with a C, nor there is another J. So is CJ something that was added in? Why is he CJ? Does he drive a Jeep?
Some people have two middle names. My sister has two middle names.
Okay. I like it. I like that, like, Luke Smith, and he's like, people call me CJ. And they're like, why? And he's like, it's how it rolls. And then he gets into his Jeep and
I think it's funnier if he requires the whole thing. Actually, my name is Luke C.J. Smith, so please refer to me that way.
Oh, like an author.
Yeah. George R.R. Martin.
Those aren't real. They actually were real names, but he didn't finish them.
Yeah, we don't know what those names are. So you're the boss man. Are we doing a email here or what?
All right, yeah, we'll do the first one. Ken from the Great White North writes in and asked, what day in, let's self-aggrandize ourselves. Thanks, Ken.
Oh, God.
What day in iFanboy history above all others do you wish you could relive, and what day do you wish you could have mind wiped from your memory?
I don't know. Mind wiped from your memory.
What do we do? All right, so, I mean, if you want to talk about what day in iFanboy history, and this is really interesting, is that, like, we've had a lot of great days, and I think that, to me, the high point of this whole thing forever has been this sort of, it was in May of 2008, we went to Stan Lee's office, and we talked to him for an hour and filmed it, and that, was, and it is not because we got to meet a famous person, and I'm not, like, we've met a lot of famous people and whatever. But it was that, and now who knows, you know, how much he was putting on an act, but it felt like we were hanging out with Stan, and he was present and cool and interesting, and we all had a really fun time, and it wasn't, oddly enough, it wasn't false at all. It was like a real experience with the thing. That's the first thing I'd point to.
A specific day, absolutely. It's hard, you know, because we've been doing this for almost more than 20 years. Mm-hmm. So there's been a lot of days. I want to think about some day where you and me and Ron were up at like 3 a.m. trying to finish something, and it devolved into like laughing fits for some stupid reason. Those would be good days to relive. I just can't think of why or when they were. I mean, if I had to pick a specific day, probably the Stanley day. It was a good day. We were in L.A. We had tacos. We had a pool in our hotel. We went to Stanley's office. And it was like all the things about it were good. The whole day was good.
Yeah, yeah, you're right.
You know, but yeah, I mean, but there's been so many good days of just like friends making this thing and, you know, laughing till you're crying because some dumb editing thing somebody did and somebody went, hey, look at this. And then we started, you know, like, you know, remember we were in my old place in Brooklyn, we were editing one of the con shows and that was the one where we did Ron chasing after Robert Downey Jr. When somebody did the flash to black and white freeze frame and we put the Goodbye Horses music in. And we all started laughing like crazy, like stuff like that.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. I think, I mean, if I had anything, it would be, you know, there's times like where we were doing things where I was so, where I, you know, I was either nervous that I didn't know what I was doing or I was impatient because I didn't know how to appreciate it at the time.
Not Goodbye Horses, Spandau Ballet, remember?
Yeah. 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 Yes. Yeah. You know, so like the first.
Goodbye Horses would be a different vibe.
The first year that we were going around doing interviews at Comic-Con, and I was telling somebody about this the other day, I was like, no, we were the first people to do that. And I, mm-hmm. I don't mean to, like the next year there was people with cameras everywhere. The year we did, no one was talking to comic creators on a video camera. Like, was not a thing. I will take credit for that. We, not I. You know, I would have appreciated that. I would have been like, oh, look at this cool thing that we're doing. Like, instead, we felt like we were in the way and we were bothering people and trying not
to. Foster syndrome.
Yes.
Yeah.
You know, appreciate
that's those why those
things.
Interviews were so bad because we were like in and out.
We're not even
like,
supposed
sorry,
to be here.
Don't take up too much of your time.
Yep. You know, I wish that there's, I mean, because we're talking about comics, we're talking about iFanboy and comics, so these are the things I'm going to go to. It isn't about people, but like, I wish I had done more research, you know, when I talked to Joe Kubert. Not that it went bad, mm-hmm. but like, I wish I knew more so I could have asked him better questions and understood it better. I wish, you know, that which isn't the same thing as reliving because I don't, but it's almost like I wish I could appreciate those things that I got to do more, but you never do. You never know that something's great until after it's over, sure. And it's gone by.
Context. What would you mind wipe? Was it the time in the hot tub?
It's exactly what I was going to say. Yes. Where I like vapidly insulted Rob Liefeld and I knew nothing about Rob Liefeld.
At Comic-Con. Yeah.
Yeah. At Comic-Con is just parroting. I just made some stupid Liefeld joke because that's what people did, trying to sound like you're fucking cool. And the guy was like, Rob Liefeld's the greatest person who's ever done anything for me. You know, they talked about how great, you know, he treated
like
him.
Personal friend.
Yeah. And I just felt terrible. And you know, at the same time, I don't want to mind wipe it because it's an amazing lesson. It was amazing. Yeah. Don't be a prick to people lesson. You don't know what you're talking about. And
right. You
need to learn that. And I'm glad I did, but I felt bad.
Sure.
Not because I look stupid. You just want to make somebody feel bad. So
I don't think I was there. Were you alone?
I was him. It was just him and I. I must have told you
about
that.
Yeah, you came and told us later.
Yeah. But that is exactly
like, okay,
what happened.
Okay, so. Yeah. Ugh.
I hate it now. I'm embarrassed. I hate, like, if I think about my, like, something I did, my behavior is mm-hmm. terrible. But I think, yeah, you're right. Like, there's so many of those times where we were just like, wouldn't you, like, some of those shows that we did where it was like the three of us, you know, and we were working it out and we just start laughing and we can't get, I love when we start laughing and can't do the show. It's my favorite feeling on earth. There's nothing better than that.
Or, you know, the day of too many pizzas. We mentioned it last week.
I think that lives better in retrospect. I don't really need to relive that memory so much. Like, it was Domino's. It wasn't like great pizza or anything.
No, it was not great pizza, but it was,
those dinners at the San Diego steak place with all of our friends, with Darwin and Scotty and Mike Norton ordering flavorful margaritas over and over again. You know, and we're all like, you know, we're tired. We've done the thing.
They're good days.
We're on our way back to the airport or whatever, and you're not necessarily present in the moment. And you don't think, God, this is a really special thing, and this isn't coming back around again. I mean, that's my whole 20s. Like, be in the fucking moment and stop worrying about what comes next.
Well, that's what people ask me now. Like, are you going to Comic-Con? And I'm like, no. Like, are you, like, won't you miss it? It's like, well, Comic-Con is not the same.
No.
We lived a very specific Comic-Con experience. We had our friend group. It was the three of us plus, you know, Gordon intern. We had other friends would come and girlfriends or wives. You know, at one point we had like nine people in a room. We had like a whole like little traveling roadshow that would hang out and do stuff. And now it's like, you know, how many years since you've been to Comic-Con?
A long
10?
Yeah. I want to say I went in, I think 13 or 14 was the last, so 8 years.
Ron hasn't gone in years. You know, I used to go for my work, my day job for a while. That I don't work there anymore. It's like,
but what am I going to do? I'm going to buy comics. I don't need. I'm going to stand in line to meet people. I there's nothing. It's not. It's my friends.
My point
there.
Is like we had a. You know, the dragon has been chased. Like we had those yes. years. I had a very different, also fun professional comic life there for a couple years at my other job, doing. Events and things, but that's over too. Like, there's really nothing there for me at the moment. Like, I've done my 20 years at Comic-Con. It was fun, and if look, I would go again probably, but the time is not the same. And it would be all you do is you walk past places like, oh, that was really fun. We had a party there. That was fun. We had a nice dinner there.
Yeah, I went a few years ago. I mean, it might have been 5 years ago. I went to the Boston Comic-Con because it's near me. I got in and. I went and I talked to some friends, you know, like I had, mm-hmm. I had it. And then I think, I had lunch with somebody, you know, I don't know, Scotty or it was, I went, you know, and I had a long conversation with some of our other friends, but I had nothing else to do there. Like I went and I talked to my friends right. And it was good. I had, you know, drinks with, you know, another guy who's doing comics now. And actually, you know what I loved? There was a Manchester Comic-Con. And my friends who run the shop up here run Granite State Comic Con, and a number of years ago, I haven't been for the past well, I haven't been anywhere in the past couple of years, but Mitch Gerrits was a guest at that one, and Charles Soule was a guest at that one, and him and I used to be fairly good friends, and we're not enemies now. Just but yeah,
until he crossed me.
There was this bit. He started doing Star Wars books, and I was like, "Fuck this!" and you know, it was kind of a lame show, so we just kind of got to hang out a lot. But there was this one bit where I was in the lobby of one of the hotels, and I was with Ron Mars. And again, this isn't a name dropping thing. Ron Mars is a great guy. He's super funny, and he tells great stories. And he was telling us all these stories about the CrossGen days. And how mm-hmm. fucking insane it was, and just like on and on. And it was like, oh, this is great. Cause you learn the stories behind the big story that you only knew part of. Cause you'll look right. at CrossGen and go, that was crazy, right? I don't know. If you haven't heard CrossGen, go look it up. It was like a rich guy decided to start a publishing company, and he hired all these people from comics, and he made them all move down to a compound in Florida. They lost money hand over, like big names. Like Mark Waid did this. They lost money yep. hand over fist, and
George
then,
Perez.
And then it was over. And yeah. you know, and Ron was sort of just telling the stories of those things, and it's just great. It is so cool to like know the history of all these things and why it happened. You know, comics folk are just working folk, so the, you know, you get a good mm-hmm. opportunity. Anyway, like that, I can picture myself sitting there. I loved that moment. You know, to be on the inside of comic book world, and I don't mean it that way. Like, oh, I'm in, and you're not. Comics people are great people. Comics pros are my favorite people. Just hands down. You know, for all sorts of reasons. But those are the things I miss. You know what? Just because it sounds like the I loved the parties that we had with the fans. Like it, when I think yeah, of how many people who listened to the show or watched the show who we became genuine friends with over the years, and it's like dozens of people now.
Yeah.
That was fantastic.
No, I miss those rooftop high family parties that we used to yeah. do.
And the ones that I always picture the ones in New York, the sort of sweaty, relate, yeah. you don't have a voice, you know. That was great. Hey, did Mike Myers just walk through this party?
I don't know that we actually answered his question exactly the way he asked it, but we answered it in the only way we could.
Oh, I think, yeah. No, I think that works.
Contact.fanboy.com is how you can write in. Like, Ken, thanks for writing in. Quick plugs. This past month, we had a talk explode with Daniel Warren Johnson. We had a media explode with the TV game. We had a book explode that just came out this past week where Josh and I were joined by Ryan Haupt. We talked about A Contract with God and Other Tenement Stories by Will Eisner. Super fun conversation about not just the book itself, but sort of the larger world around it. So check that out right behind the show in the feed. In May, which is now, we have shows. We'll have a talk explode with Josh. We'll be interviewing somebody. We'll have a media explode. And then we'll have the Doctor Strange review at some point. All those shows will come out. We just don't know exactly when, but keep your ears and eyes open, and they will appear before you.
And if you liked what you've heard today, for some reason, and you go, this is a lingering imposter syndrome right there. We were talking about it. Like, there's just like, I don't. And also, there's like my New England, like, I'm not that great, just so you know. You can find all of our shows and writings and everything we've ever done for iFanboy to the extent that it exists over at iFanboy.com. We are proud of all of those things. I remember, just one bit. Connor and I were in Boulder, Colorado at Graphically, who had purchased us. Talk about an experience there. And at the same, like, we were tired and we were trying to do all this stuff, but we had jobs to do on the site because that was what we were doing. And it was like, we need a post for top five. And we were like, top five boots.
And we I remember this post
in 5 minutes that I still remember to this day.
We had to go to Graphically's offices, but we had to keep, you know, iFanboy was a going concern. We still were doing daily content and we had to do a post, top five post. And we just sat in their lobby. Which wasn't like an opulent lobby. It was a lobby in a little office building. And came up with the top five boots and comics. And we also did top five names, didn't we? Didn't we also do the top five names?
Wade Von Graubadger was number one.
Yeah. And it was just us. We were like laughing hysterically in the lobby doing this list. And people came in like, what is going on? We're like, nothing. Nothing you would really even understand.
There's no way to explain it. And also, we can't. I mean, if we're gonna, just to finish this out, Connor and I specifically, the day that we did the DC Villains thing where we were looking at Rainbow Raider and all those.
Well, that's coming out soon.
Yeah, I know. But like that, I don't know that I've, that's top laughter in my life.
Are you, did you finish the part where you
I think it's enough. No, minis? Pick of the week before the show comes out, you can find out at iFanboy at Twitter, Twitter X, or iFanboy Comics on Instagram. You can follow us individually, CS Kilpatrick and Jay Flanagan on Instagram. You can subscribe to our YouTube page at youtube.com/iFanboy. There's a handful of minis that are left coming back, which were our short daily shows for a time period. The new comics preview for September 4th, 2008, which sounds ridiculous even telling you. It's there if you want that for some reason. But then also, Connor's, it came from the storage unit, Batman and Robin Adventures number 6, which is a very special comic in Connor's heart.
Is it?
I thought. Maybe I'm wrong.
No, that's the animated series. Okay. Animated tie-in duck, yeah. That's not Batman and Robin. That's Batman and Robin Adventures from the animated series.
Okay. Paraback, right?
Good comic. But good comic. No. I think at that point he'd have passed.
Okay.
I think
it was a storage unit. It was the anyway.
They were all random books.
Okay,
there was some random. It doesn't matter. Anyway, like the show, leave a review or a star rating wherever you listen to your podcast. Even better, that's tell your friends word of mouth. Thanks for helping us out, spreading the word. We appreciate it. We are running long for a real world event, so we're getting out of here fast. Sorry about that. Thanks for listening.
I'm Josh. Bye. This episode is brought to you by BetterHelp. How's your social battery doing right now? I've never used that phrase, but I instantly know what it means. And I think it's interesting because it works two different ways. Some people need to have their social battery charged and they this is the introvert extrovert thing. And some people, you know, like they've got enough energy for other people, but then it's time to sort of step away. And, you know, as we get to this part where winter is ending, which again, it's opposite. I love winter. I don't need it to end. You know, you start getting together with more people and it can be a little draining on top of every other thing that we all have going on in our lives. I just assume everybody's overburdened because I think everybody's overburdened, but it can be tough to deal with. And also one of the things is like, you can't necessarily understand why you feel that way or why it's making you tired, but it's a real thing. If you think that you could use some help with it, if you could figure out a way to make things better, therapy is a great way to help. It can give you that kind of self-awareness to know how to ride that level just right so that you you feel good, you feel right. If you're thinking of starting therapy, you can give BetterHelp a try. It is entirely online. It is designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule, which is, again, we've been talking about being busy, right? You got to fit that in. You got a lunch period. You can do it during that time, whichever. That's possible. You fill out a brief questionnaire and get matched with a licensed therapist. You can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. I like that. There is no penalty for finding the person who is right for you. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/iFanboy today. Get 10% off of your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.com/iFanboy.